Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello and welcome back, all you ghouls and goblins. Happy Halloween. My absolute favorite holiday of all time is finally upon us. Every single year, I look forward to Halloween, and for as long as I can remember, I have been a Halloween freak. I love absolutely everything about the holiday, and people always ask me if I love it because of the candy. And in reality, I actually just love all things spooky. I love the costumes. I love the cool, crisp weather, which, unfortunately, where I live in Las Vegas, Nevada, we don't get much of that. But I do love getting scared at haunted houses. I love the colors of fall and all things pumpkin spice, of course. It just gives me this homey, cozy feeling inside when fall time hits. Then, of course, on November 1st, I have to admit that I always feel kind of sad that spooky season is over and I have to wait another full year to experience that feeling all over again. I know that sounds kind of crazy. Approximately 73% of American households celebrate Halloween. 66% of Americans plan to hand out candy this year, and 51% of Americans plan to dress up themselves or their kids and their pets. 51% of Americans decorate their homes or yards, and that is honestly my favorite part. 46% will carve pumpkins. It has been estimated that across the country, people will spend $3.9 billion on candy and $4.3 billion on costumes. I have to admit that I spent a solid chunk of money on candy this year because my husband and I will be passing out candy at the Air Force Base Trunk or Treat where we live. I went all out with the decorations for our car and our costumes, so make sure that you follow me on Instagram to see what we dressed up as. I'm not going to give it away. By the time you're listening to this episode, we will likely be out there passing out candy, or we might be finishing up by then. So hop on Instagram and find me at Crimeaholly to see our amazing setup that I put together this year. Hopefully it turns out just like I think it's going to. So the history behind Halloween dates back long, long ago, with immigrants from Scotland and Ireland bringing the holiday to the United States. Commercialization of Halloween started in the 20th century, and Halloween costumes began appearing in stores in the 1930s, with the famous phrase trick or treat starting in the 1950s. In today's episode, we are taking it back to Halloween night in 1974. But before I do that, I have a big, fangtastic shout out to give to two new ghouls in the Patreon family, and that is Brittany and Wendy. Welcome you two. You guys really put the boo in my bootiful mood this week. If you guys want to be like my ghouls, Brittany and Wendy, for just $2 a month, you can banish those pesky ads to the underworld and enjoy Crime with Holly episodes ad-free. It's a cheap way to keep your chills spooky and your listening bootifully uninterrupted. So thank you so much again to Brittany and Wendy. All right, guys, I promise I will stop with all of the cheesy Halloween-y puns. Let's go ahead and kick off this Halloween episode. Today's episode is on the Candyman. We'll be right back. The O'Brien family lived in Pasadena, Texas in 1974. In this family was Ronald and his wife, Deneen, and their two children, Timothy, who was 8 years old, and Elizabeth, who was five. By all accounts, Ronald O'Brien was a fairly likable man. Most people had nice things to say about him. He was also a deacon at the Second Baptist Church, where he sang in the church choir. Considering he was a deacon, he had to be pretty involved with his church and community. Not only that, but he was an optician at Texas State Optical, where he would help people with their eyeglasses, he'd help them choose the right frames for their faces and lenses, he would help make repairs on broken glasses, he'd make adjustments, and he just closely worked with the optometrists in the office. So he was pretty well known, I would say, within the local community. Pasadena, Texas, back in the 1970s, was not a small town by any means, but it wasn't extremely huge either. It had a population of less than 90,000 people. Again, I know that's still very large, but in the grand scheme of things, like where I live, that's actually small. With where he worked and his service to the church, people knew him, and he was a staple within his community. The night of October 31st, 1974, was a cool and damp Halloween night. A mist hung in the air that was fitting for the spooky season. Ronald set out with Timothy and Elizabeth to go trick-or-treating with some of their church friends. Timothy was dressed up as a character from Planet of the Apes. The movie had just come out, and it was a pretty popular costume back in 1974. Ronald took his kids over to Jim Bates' neighborhood because apparently they lived in a more upscale neighborhood. This was something that Jim and Ronald had been planning for weeks. On that night, Ronald would walk the kids to the door, as many parents do while their kids are trick-or-treating, and Jim would wait on the sidewalk. Everything was going as normal as you would expect. The kids were laughing, they were enjoying trick-or-treating, they were using their manners, and they collected way too much candy. And then they came upon this house that had all of its lights turned off. As we know, that typically is a sign that the people living there aren't passing out candy or they've ran out of candy. And you usually just skip right past that house and keep on going. But for whatever reason, Ronald was adamant that they were going to go up to this house and ring the doorbell anyway. So up there they go, and they ring the doorbell, and they wait. And as you would expect, nobody came to the door. But Ronald just kept waiting. The kids within seconds were getting impatient. They wanted to move on to the next house and continue their quest to get as much candy as they could before they had to head home to go to bed. But Ronald remained rooted in place. The kids by this point had gone back to the sidewalk where Jim was waiting, and they started to walk to the next house. Meanwhile, Ronald just stood there waiting at the front door of this dark house. He calls down to Jim that he's just going to keep waiting to see if anybody comes to the door. So Jim and the kids go on, and not long later, Ronald catches back up with his group, and to the kids' delight, he is not empty-handed. According to Ronald, the homeowners eventually opened the door and handed him 5 pixie sticks for the kids. And I'm going to go ahead and assume that everyone here knows what a pixie stick is, but if you're not familiar, they are these little tubes that are filled with a powdered candy. Honestly, I don't really see them in stores anymore unless it's like a specialty candy shop, but I absolutely loved pixie sticks when I was a kid. So Ronald has these pixie sticks that were given to him by the homeowner, and he gives each kid 1. And then he passes off the 5th pixie stick that he had to a church boy that he spotted walking by. The group continues about their way a little bit longer until the mist that had been lingering around all evening turned into a full-blown downpour. Instead of trick-or-treating through the rain, they figured that, you know, the kids have enough candy, they don't need any more, we're just going to go ahead and call it a night. Before bed, Ronald allowed his children to pick out one piece of candy each that they could eat before they had to go to sleep for the night. Timothy was so excited and he picked the pixie stick. According to an article published by the Statesman, Timothy had a hard time getting this pixie stick open because it was closed with a staple. And if you know anything about pixie sticks, they used to be in like little plastic. I think they changed it to paper at some point, but they were in these little plastic tubes. And they were usually heat sealed on each end with some sort of like hot iron or something. But for whatever reason, this pixie stick had been closed with a staple. And instead of Ronald thinking that, hey, you know, that's kind of weird, that's unusual, he happily helped Timothy open it up and Timothy poured the entire thing into his mouth. Instantly, he started complaining that the candy tasted bitter, it tasted weird, something was off, and it was just not your typical pixie stick. Ronald, being the outstanding and doting father that he was, he rushed to grab his son some Kool-Aid so that Timothy could wash the rest of it down and get rid of that nasty flavor. But within minutes, things took a turn for the worse. On Halloween night in 1974, little Timothy O'Brien was allowed to pick one piece of Halloween candy to eat before bed. He picked a pixie stick and within minutes of consuming it, he was violently ill. Timothy rushed to the bathroom where he began vomiting and convulsing. Ronald apparently scooped his son up and held him until he went limp in his arms. And at that point, he called 911. When the ambulance arrived, they rushed Timothy to the hospital, but when he got there, it was too late. There was nothing that they could do to save him because he died en route. It hadn't even been a full hour from the time that Timothy ate that pixie stick to when he died. It happened that fast. The news about what happened to Timothy spread like a wildfire, and the people in the community began to panic that maybe their kids had also received some poisoned candy. And mind you, this was all happening back before checking your kids' candy was a thing that parents did. I personally don't remember a time in my life where my parents didn't check my candy, and I remember being so annoyed by it because I was like, nobody's gonna poison my candy, Mom, just let me eat my Reese's. And I just wanted to dig in, go ham, put myself into a candy coma. Of course, now that I'm a parent, I also do a quick check of my kids' candy because you truly never know what could happen. But back in 1974, there was trust in communities, and you didn't really fear that bad things were going to happen to your loved ones, let alone someone purposely poisoning your children. When parents learned about what had happened to Timothy, they started throwing their kids' candy away. They were like, nope, we are not going to risk it. We're just going to throw it away. Some other parents actually took their kids' candy to the police stations to have the police officers inspect it to make sure it was okay. But when Timothy's autopsy was conducted, they found cyanide in his system. According to an article by Medium.com, when a pathologist tested the actual pixie stick that Timothy ate from, he said that it had contained enough cyanide to kill 2 grown adults. Authorities contacted the families in the neighborhood that they had been trick-or-treating in, letting them know that if any of their kids received one of these pixie sticks, do not allow them to eat it. And instead, they wanted them to be brought into the police station to be turned in and further tested. They eventually were able to locate all 5 of the pixie sticks, and thankfully, no other child had ate theirs. Police began questioning people in the neighborhood about what kind of candy they gave out, and nobody admitted to giving out those pixie sticks. And word started to circulate that at some point, those pixie sticks were in the hands of Ronald O'Brien. And it was him who gave them to his kids, Jim's kids, and that random church boy. Those within the neighborhood started to suspect that it was Ronald who poisoned his own son, which obviously came as a major shock since everybody that pretty much knew him didn't have a bad thing to say. People within the neighborhood really started to pressure police for them to demand Ronald to speak up and tell them which house he got those pixie sticks from, since he was the one who passed them out to the children. Now, when first questioned, Ronald claimed that he couldn't remember which house it was, which is kind of funny because, you know, he was the guy that was standing there forever waiting for someone to randomly open the door. I don't understand how you could forget that. He made a whole big deal out of standing there waiting at that house because he was just certain that someone was going to open the door, even though that house had zero lights on to indicate that they were passing out candy. And then all of a sudden, he claimed that they did eventually answer the door and handed over the pixie sticks. Despite his story not quite adding up, they were trying to give Ronald the benefit of the doubt. It was dark out. Maybe he was, you know, more focused on his kids. He just forgot which house it was. So they walked him up and down those two streets that he and Jim and the kids went trick-or-treating on. And they walked him up and down three whole times, hoping that somehow one of these houses would stick out to him as the pixie stick house. Finally, after stalling for what felt like forever, Ronald pointed to a house and said that that was the house that he got them from. When asked about the man who opened the door, Ronald couldn't describe him. He said that when the man opened the door, he only opened it up just enough that he could stick his hand outside to give those five cyanide-laced pixie sticks to him. Now, I'm just going to say, if that were me and I knocked on this door and there was no lights on and it took forever for anybody to answer the door, and then all of a sudden they open the door and just stick their hand out, that would have been a little suspicious, and that honestly would have creeped me out. I wouldn't have done that, obviously, but, you know, apparently Ronald did. I would have not taken that candy whatsoever. That just gives me the creeps to think about just this hand coming out to hand over these pixie sticks that had staples in them, mind you. So police were like, okay, this is the house. Let us get in contact with the owner. And they found the owner, and his name was Courtney Melvin. Courtney Melvin was questioned about the pixie sticks, and he claimed that he didn't know a thing about them. He told police that he wasn't even home on Halloween because he was working until 11 p.m. as an air traffic controller at the William P. Hobby Airport. Investigators were able to confirm that his alibi checked out and he was ruled out as a suspect. So their eyes then shift back to Ronald, and they began looking into him a little bit harder, and they were able to find that his story really truly wasn't adding up. They also learned that Ronald was in debt. And I'm not just talking about like a little itty bitty amount of debt. I'm talking about a lot of debt. He was in over his head over $100,000, which back in 1974, that was a hell of a lot of money. According to the Medium.com article, $100,000 in 1974 equates to over $500,000 in today's money. So again, that's a whole lot of money. And not only was Ronald in debt, but as they began looking into his personal life a little bit closer, they realized that he also had a hard time holding down a job for any amount of time. In the 10 years before Timothy's murder, Ronald had worked 21 different jobs and was about to lose his current job as well. They also learned that his car was about to be repossessed and his home was about to be foreclosed on. And that was not all that police uncovered. What they found next sent chills up their spines. Ronald O'Brien, in the months leading up to Timothy's death, had taken out life insurance policies on both of his children that were extremely high dollar amounts for children. He had taken a total of $60,000 out on life insurance for them. Not only that, but on November 1st, Ronald was calling into the life insurance company to see about his payout on little Timothy. And mind you, his son hadn't even been dead for 24 hours before he started making those calls. Talk about absolutely heartless. The final nail in the coffin that really drove police's suspicion out of the park was just a few days before Halloween, Ronald had purchased cyanide at a chemical supply store in Houston. On November 5th, 1974, Ronald O'Brien was arrested and charged with capital murder and four counts of attempted murder. Ronald maintained his innocence despite the pretty solid evidence they had against him. Ronald's trial began just 6 months later, and many people that were close to him testified against him in court. Two key witnesses were put on the stand, and the first was a sales clerk at the chemical supply store who said Ronald asked how he could purchase cyanide. The other was a chemist who claimed that in 1973, Ronald asked him how much cyanide would be needed to kill someone. Ronald's trial lasted about a month, and after the prosecution and defense rested their case, it only took the jury 46 minutes to decide that Ronald O'Brien was guilty on all charges. In addition to that, it only took them 71 minutes to decide his fate. Ronald O'Brien would be put to death. This story became known nationwide, and Ronald was dubbed the Candyman. Ronald was sent off to prison to await his execution in Huntsville, Texas. And his execution was scheduled for August 8, 1980. But his attorney, however, was able to successfully petition for a stay of execution. A second date was scheduled for May 25, 1982, and again it was postponed. A third date was scheduled for October 31st, 1982, which marked the 8-year anniversary of Timothy's death, and sadly, again, his execution was postponed. Finally, on March 31st, 1984, with over 300 people outside of the prison, Ronald O'Brien was executed just after midnight. When the signal was finally given that he was dead, the crowd roared with happiness and began chanting trick or treat. And they threw candy at anyone that was there protesting his execution. And wildly enough, there were people there that were protesting him being put to death. Ronald O'Brien maintained his innocence until his very final breath. In his last words, he said, quote, "I forgive all, and I do mean all. Those who have been involved in my death, God bless you all, and may God's best blessings be always yours," end quote. Timothy was an innocent little boy, only 8 years old, and was murdered by his own father for selfish and unthinkable reasons. This story forever changed Halloween. Crimesters, that is all that I have on this case. I hope that everyone has a safe and very happy Halloween. Whether you're staying in or going out for some fun, please be safe and be aware of your surroundings. If you're not already a part of my private Facebook group, you can find it by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all pictures and information pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage all members to share all things true crime. Let me remind you to follow me over on Instagram at Crimeaholly to check out all of our Halloween pictures and to keep up with what I'm doing in my life. Again, I hope you all have a wonderfully spooky Halloween. Be sure to check your kiddos' candy and throw out anything that looks a little sus, especially if it is sealed with a staple. Until next time, y'all, be aware and take care. Bye-bye.